Sure. Well, I think none of us really fully appreciates how strong we are, right? We all, I think, live our lives chronically underestimating our sense of hope, and that can become self-fulfilling, right? We can build feelings of hope and resilience by just setting little goals for ourselves and not being too hard on ourselves and watching beautiful things happen and appreciate the people in our lives who give us the sense of purpose, who are the actual mechanisms of hope. I know that's been the case for me. And like I said, we're all much stronger than I think we ever let ourselves believe we are. Irrespective of what happens to our bodies, our spirit is much more resilient than our bodies could ever be. And none of us is perfect. None of us is a superhero. We all feel the full spectrum of human emotions, but we can't let those subsume or consume how we feel about ourselves. And just because our lives change in ways that we don't expect, it doesn't mean that they're any less good or less meaningful. It's just finding new avenues of meaning and purpose. And we all can do it. We all can do it despite how difficult my life might seem. So that would be kind of how I would characterize some of how I've lived my life. I hope that's helpful to everybody else.
Do you need encouragement to turn tragedies into your own triumphant life story? If so, this podcast is for you. Listen to powerful guests who have persevered through challenges so you can gain strength to build your championship life. The host of Professor of Perseverance Podcast, Dr. James Perdue.
So let's go ahead and start this podcast. Look at this. I even got Brooke on before I was going to give the introduction. Boy, man, how do you like it when things play different? How do you like that, Brooke? When things play different, you know, I didn't do what I wanted to do exactly. Hey, we already have Jan Fanzler on here. Thank you for coming in, Jan. And she's saying she's here.
So nice to see you, Jan.
Jan, she's a good one. So she's been on the podcast before as well. So, all right. Well, everybody, welcome to the Professor of Perseverance podcast. I'm Dr. James Perdue. Hey, the Professor of Perseverance himself, and don't let that doctor thing, don't let it overwhelm you, okay? I'll tell you again that my doctor is not in writing out a prescription for you, but if you need me to drive somewhere to go help you pick up some, I'll do it for you. I'll do what I can to help out. So, all right, on our show today, you know, we talk about people who are struggling, who's been through something, it doesn't have to be so terrible situation, you know, but it's people who are struggling through life and how they have overcome it and how they have persevered. And we use that word perseverance and to help make life better for other people to be able to use as a memento. Hey, learn from me. Hey, Brooke, whether you believe it or not, we as people are watching us so they can see how we're doing things, and which I think they ought to be inspired by their own stuff from there is what I believe. So, but on today's show, today's podcast, we have Dr. Brooke Ellison, and let me show you something here. Let me find it here. She, and you can tell us what year this was, that had actually a Lifetime movie that came out, directed by Christopher Reeve. I wish I'd have got to meet him. But directed by Christopher Reeve and did the Brooke Ellison story. It's can't read the fine print down there, but something similar to One Mother, One Daughter, One Journey. And that's on a DVD, and you can find it on your other on demand stuff like that to rent and look at. And also the Brooke Ellison story, her book, and she's working on another book. And when I got this too, I don't know if it's Miracle Happen.
Yeah, that's and the again, same one, actually. Yeah, one is the hardcover version and one is the softcover version. Yeah.
So okay. All right.
Title, but yeah, so it's the same book.
One's hardcover, one's soft. Okay. Yeah. And Miracle Happen, and again, one mother, one daughter, one journey. So Welcome to the show, Dr. Brooke Ellison.
Thank you so much, Dr. Perdue. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for your time today. Thank you for the invitation. Thank you for the work that you do. You know, you're so right that, you know, we all go through these difficult circumstances in our lives. Some are like much more obvious than what other people are experiencing, but we all have something. And what better way to make use of what seems difficult than to have to kind of share those stories and hope that somebody can gain something from it. And kind of learn from how we interact with each other. So that's really been a gift for me, and I'm sure for you, obviously. So it's a pleasure to be here today.
Yeah, it's funny how people, they would look towards us who've been through, you know, leprosy and everything else in the world to see how we handle it. And then to, it gives them, and I hate to use the word inspiration, because I told one dad, well, I'll say a dad, told this one man one time, I said, man, you need to be looking at inspiration in your own self and your wife and your own children. You ought to be able to find your own inspiration. You shouldn't have to be looking around. Now, I don't know if he got offended or whatnot, but yeah, he just come up, oh, you're such an inspiration. I said, you don't know me, man. You just saw me push across the store. You know, so
no, I totally understand that, right? We're not inspirations. We're just doing basic things, and we all have the ability, I think, to do much more than we ever expect to give ourselves credit for. So, I've learned a lot about life, not from the circumstances that I face per se, but you know how other people have taught me different things about life.
Oh yeah, and then I'm still learning from other people as well, you know, to help and to motivate for me to be able to do better and go from there. So, now, Brooke, let's go back here. For the ones that don't know, how did you become a quadriplegic?
Sure. So, I'm from Long Island, New York. So Long Island, for those of you who are not familiar with where it is, it kind of juts off of the East Coast of New York City. So it's kind of juts off. It's right under Connecticut. There are a lot of people who work from the city from Long Island, who work in the city and vice versa. And there's like a lot of cross-pollination between Long Island and the city. My parents, when I was a little tyke, moved from the more kind of congested part of Long Island to where it was a little bit more open space, a little bit more kind of breathing room per se. And so I grew up here on Long Island, on the North Shore of Long Island. As a child, I grew up with my older sister and my younger brother and did a lot of the things that are very kind of stereotypical of the life of somebody growing up in suburbia. I was, I did a lot of the activities that kids do. I was involved in dancing. I was involved in Little League baseball and soccer. I sang in my church choir. So like my life was very much characterized by these different kinds of activities, and it gave my life, you know, a sense of meaning, you know, a sense of directionality. When I was 11 years old, this was September of 1990, I was walking home from my first day of seventh grade on a real kind of like, you know, idyllic, picturesque day. And in order to get home, I had to cross a fairly major highway that runs north and south on Long Island. And when crossing the road, I was hit by a car that was traveling about 55 miles an hour southbound. In that accident, obviously I suffered significant injuries to all throughout my body. So my head hit the windshield of the car first and kind of cracked my skull open. Then I was thrown about 100 feet in front of the car and landed on the pavement, bit about a third of my tongue off and damaged onto all of my my limbs. I was in cardiac and respiratory arrest. It happened right outside of a local firehouse. So the fact that it was in such close proximity to the firehouse was really the only way that my life was saved. There were people who could immediately begin life-saving measures, CPR and that kind of thing. They took me to the biggest trauma center, actually, in Eastern Long Island, Stony Brook Hospital. It was just actually about several hundred feet away from the scene of my accident. And at that time, I was brought into the trauma unit in the emergency department. And that's kind of, you know, really, that space is relegated for the most extreme cases. And my parents arrived at the hospital shortly thereafter. And the doctors were telling my parents essentially that you had to expect the worst, that you likely your daughter will not survive the accident. The injuries that she sustained were just too extreme for her body. So basically to expect the worst, if she were to live, that she would likely be significantly cognitively impaired and not really able to engage with the world in any meaningful way. So I was in a coma for about 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And the EEG reading, so the electro, encephalograms were essentially flat. So basically, the measures that are used to determine brain activity were flat, and it was very unlikely that I was going to have any real ability moving forward. Somehow they kind of righted themselves, and I awoke from the coma that I was in after about 36 hours, and I was able to make eye contact with my parents, and I wasn't able to talk because I couldn't breathe on my own, and the ventilator that I was using didn't allow me the capability to talk. So I was mouthing words to my parents, and they explained to me that I'd been hit by a car and that I was in the hospital, and that they were going to do all they could to make things as beautiful for my life as they possibly could. One of the things that I was most concerned about at that time, which was kind of odd, I guess, was I wanted to make sure that I got back to school. That was my kind of my most pressing concern, despite the fact that I was in this kind of devastating condition, having undergone all of these just traumatic injuries. And that was a promise that my parents made to me right at that time. So I was in the hospital in pediatric intensive care at Stony Brook Hospital for first about 6 weeks, where I became quote unquote stable. They stabilized me to whatever degree that that means something. They put me in the halo brace, and I guess it made it clearer that I was going to survive from one day to the next. That was kind of what stabilization or stability looked like and meant at the time. After that, I was transferred to a pediatric rehabilitation facility in New Jersey. I was actually one of the only ones in the country that would take me, given the severity of my injuries. And I spent 7.5 months there. So despite all the injuries that I had to my body at the time of my accident, broken bones everywhere, significant head trauma, all sorts of damage to my organs and stuff, the only kind of lasting injury, kind of sustaining injury, was the injury to my spinal cord, C2, C3, which left me paralyzed from my neck down and on a ventilator to breathe. And it was in rehabilitation that I kind of learned to live my life differently. Like, I didn't really learn to be a person with a disability. I didn't learn to incorporate that into my identity, not for years past that, but at least when I was in rehabilitation, I was able to learn how to learn again, how to live again, how to do things differently, to become as prepared as I possibly could be to re-enter a world that at that time was not really all that welcoming or built for people with disabilities. And I knew at that point in my life that I was going to have to fight much harder than I ever had to fight for things before. I knew that my life was going to be one of more challenge than I had ever experienced or really even thought possible. But I was up for it. I was up to do it because I knew that I had life to live and a family to be a part of, friends to see, a life that I wanted to continue to live, even though it was going to be very different than it ever had been before. So that's what I did. Came home from the hospital and then tried to begin my life again.
All right, that's all we're done for today and everything. Everybody, hope you enjoyed the. No. There you go. You did that. That's awesome. Now, I'm like you. I don't know if you've heard this statement before, but I've had someone before go, "Oh, I couldn't do what you're doing, man." And then I'll tell them the same thing you're just saying. We want to have a life as best possible as we can, like everybody else does. Right. So then we have a choice. we can do nothing and expect nothing, or we can do something and hopefully something is going to be better than doing nothing.
Doing nothing. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, people don't ever put, like, I think people try to put themselves in my position, in your position, without thinking about any kind of context or what the, you know, what the alternative would be. And I certainly wasn't willing to kind of succumb to the alternative, right? To not have life, right? To not do anything, to kind of relegate myself to the corner and you not have as rich a life as I possibly could. I wasn't willing to do that. And I think many people, when they're in that situation, have to view their own sense of resilience and wherewithal differently than they may have ever expected, right? Like, it's not until you're in the situation where you have to make that decision. We either not do anything or continue to live, and you can find the way to live.
Find a way to live, and again, get out there and do the best that you can. It mm-hmm. may not be the perfect life, but who has a perfect life, right?
Exactly. And we always try to envision that, right? Like the other life or some other version of ourselves would have been the perfect life, when that's, you know, really not the case.
And then even with the severe tragedy, that maybe our life will not be what we were hoping or planning on being, but that doesn't mean it's doomsday forever. Again, we find new interest in life, mm-hmm. and maybe we can capitalize to use that.
Exactly. End up doing things that we never would have imagined. I know that that was certainly the case for me. So, you know, like I had mentioned, you know, a lot of my life up until the point of my accident was dedicated to a lot of physical activities. And like that probably would have been the course that I had stayed on. You know, so I was certainly always interested in my academics and in school. But maybe I would have invested more time in things that maybe wouldn't have brought me as far as just purely investing in my education did. Right. So I returned to school and focused on my education and my academics and graduated and ultimately went to Harvard, where I did my undergraduate degree. And that was a pretty incredible experience. That was something that I never would have imagined being able to do with my life. And you had possibly not, if I hadn't been able to focus my attentions on the things that were still very valuable in my life, my education, my ability to kind of engage with the world, my ability to make a difference, I probably would not have gone in that direction. And many of the things that have happened in my life since that time, I know certainly would not have ever been afforded to me. And I wouldn't want to sacrifice those things, right? Like, people ask me a lot if I would ever want to like go back in time and not cross that road or whatever, not have the accident happen to me. And it's not that easy of a question to answer, because the things that I have done over the years as a result of the life that I have lived, I would never want to sacrifice, right? Like, it would be, my life would be easier if I weren't living with a quadriplegia. I certainly face a lot of the comorbidities and kind of conditions that go along with quadriplegia that I wish I did not have to confront, whether it's infection, whether it's pressure ulcers, whether it's some other thing, sepsis or infection, whatever, all of those things that make life more difficult. But at the same time, like, the things that have happened in my life, I would never want to give up. I would never want to sacrifice. And I think that it would be foolish to just say, yes, I'd rather some other life rather than the life that I have.
And Sam, thank you for coming in, buddy. And he says, well spoken, lady. Hey, Sam, lady is Dr. Brooke Ellison. So on today. Hey, two things I want to go back to. You just mentioned here that she is a graduate of Harvard. Yes, Harvard. Okay. And are you still like the only quadriplegic to graduate from Harvard?
I don't think I am the only one. The first one, certainly the first to have done it twice. So I actually did my undergraduate degree as well as my master's. So I did my undergraduate degree in cognitive neuroscience at Harvard, which is an undergraduate program that is the kind of sits at the intersection of biology and psychology. And then I have a special certification in mind, brain, and behavior. So I did that as my undergraduate degree. And then I went back after I graduated. So I graduated in 2000. I actually gave the commencement address, one of the commencement addresses at my graduation, which was a pretty exciting thing to do for sure. but then went back to Harvard in 2002 for a master's at the Kennedy School of Government and in public policy. So, it's unfortunately rare, right? There should be more people with disabilities of all kinds who have the opportunity to do things like that, right? And like, our world is not necessarily as well built as it should be to provide those opportunities for people. They're no less capable, no less able to do the things that many graduates of Harvard or graduates of other institutions do, but sometimes they're not given the opportunities to excel in the ways that they should. So I think I am maybe the first, hopefully not the last.
Yeah, amen, sister. And again, I said two things. One, graduating from Harvard. Now, I didn't graduate from Harvard per se. Now, notice I said per se. Okay. We have a college here locally where I live. I just live 5-10 minutes away from it. And I got my associate's degree there. But when I was before my injury, we would call it the 13th grade because it just looked like, I mean, it just didn't look like a university. It does now, but it did. It didn't when I went. Mm-hmm. And we also named it Harvard Near the Highway. So I didn't per se Harvard your way, but Harvard Near the Highway. I did graduate from Harvard. From the highway.
I mean, it's just a title, right? It's just a title. It's the commitment that you put into it that really makes the difference, right? And what you go on to do, right? And that's what makes any degree, no matter where it's gotten from, meaningful.
That's right. And then, so the second thing I was getting to, you know, you're talking about the question was brought to you, would you go back and not cross that street? Mm-hmm. All right. I've had that question to me about, I got my neck broke playing football. Mm-hmm. I was 2 weeks into college and got a spinal cord injury. And actually, before my neck got broken, I actually walked out of the huddle and quit playing. And then someone said, we need someone to run the ball. And I said, all right, I'll come back for one more play. If I'd have kept walking instead of coming back for that one more play, people have asked, would I go back and change it? I'm like you. I don't know where my life would be if I wouldn't have gotten hurt. Sure. I mean, hopefully something good would have come out. Hopefully I'd have had a good life. Hopefully. But we never know. I may have been laying underneath the next bridge homeless with a cardboard box wrapped around me. Who knows? But I know what I have done since then. And I don't know if I don't know. The only regret that I have is that you can join in here with this here is only regret I have is my family having to suffer along with me. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Other than that, the stuff that I've been through, the stuff that I came out on the best end better, the things I've accomplished. I mean, I was just a regular C student in high school. Now, when I see some of my fellow high school graduates at our reunion, and then they hear Dr. Purdue, they're going, you? so it's kind of funny there. But, the only one regret that I have is my family suffering along with me.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, I understand that. Yeah, so I think a common fallacy for people, no matter what their lives are like, is we envision some other more idyllic, more perfect version of ourselves if we had only done this other thing, right? Like if only this other opportunity had been afforded, if only I didn't make this decision, my life would be exactly the way I wanted. And I think that is so, it's I think just inaccurate to start, but also so unfair, right? Because, you know, we're kind of holding our own lives up to some idealized version of ourselves, which doesn't ever really exist, right? And, that said, irrespective of that, like the things that I have done, I'm really quite proud of and don't think would have happened if I had not made the decisions that I did on that day, September 4th of 1990, right? Like if I didn't decide to walk home, if my life hadn't taken the course that it did, right? Like I don't think it's a fair assumption to make that things would have been some more perfect version of my life. That said, I totally agree and understand that, you know, my family has made significant, I don't want to say sacrifices, because I think that's maybe not exactly the right word. They've made significant commitments to me that have accounted for a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of resources, a lot of, you know, a lot of changes that really had to be made in order to make my life as purposeful and as rich as it has been. And, you know, I know that my sister and my brother were kind of not, you know, they had a life that was different than many other children's because of my accident and, you know, living with quadriplegia. You know, we didn't go on vacations like other people went on vacations, right? We didn't do a lot of things that many other families do and you did at the time, because it was a lot harder for us to do that. You know, my parents, you know, my mother, for those of you who are not really familiar with my story, my mother, her very first day as a teacher was the day of my accident. And then that was also her last day of teaching. She left her job and you had to be with me, to be by my hospital bed for the full year or the 9 months that I was in the hospital. We weren't able to secure the nursing that we needed in order for me to go back to school independently. So she made the decision that she would go to school with me for all the years that I went to school. So she had dedicated her life to becoming a teacher and then had to shift that whole plan. And that was, you know, that was difficult. It was difficult for several reasons. I mean, that was something that she always wanted to do and was something that she had studied long and hard to do. And then also kind of my parents were banking on that additional income. So we had to recalculate how we were going to live our lives, do things differently. So it was a challenge for sure. But one of the things that I'm probably most proud of, like people ask me a lot about, what is the most significant thing in your life? Or what do you think is the thing that you are most, that you are proudest of in your life? And I think they think it would be something like graduating from Harvard or, you know, having a movie made about your life or you're running for political office or whatever, like some of the things that I've done through over the years have been, but it's not really that. I think my family's ability to say, like, this is a really difficult situation. We know that, but we're going to try to do as much as we can with it.
And we're going to, do the best we can. And in the long run, we just hope that everything works out the best that it can. And again, we're talking with Dr. Brooke Ellison. Again, you can go get a soft cover book of hers, The Brooke Ellison Story. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, you're talking about the movie on Lifetime and everything. The very first time I saw it, I forgot exactly when it was, but I saw it was being advertised on Lifetime. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, a chick in a wheelchair, me in a wheelchair, I got to support the girl in the wheelchair. I'm going to watch the movie. I mean, that's before I knew what the movie was exactly about. I just remember we got to support our own here. So I watched the movie, and then I watched it again, and I watched it again. And I became a school teacher and a coach for about 12, 13 years. Your movie, I bought it when I could. And you know as well as I do, there's some days teaching don't become teaching too well. And so I would pop in your DVD to have, and I taught seventh graders.
Oh, my gosh.
And they loved watching it.
Really?
That one, for those, it takes us 2 days to get through it. And they, especially the young ladies. Yeah. And so they really, really enjoyed it. And so, and then of course I bought I got the soft cover book right there. I bought years ago as well. And so,
wow, that means so much to me. Thank you. I had no idea. Yeah, like I get correspondences and messages from people. So that movie was made in 2004. So actually, right after I graduated with my master's, and it was filmed actually down in New Orleans. So a lot closer to you than to me. My family and I drove down to New Orleans that summer of 2004. Oh my gosh, it was so hot.
I would have loved to meet Christopher Reeves during the time. I remember Christopher Reeves, I've never met him, but I remember watching the night before his injury. It was on a Sunday. He was doing equestrian, got thrown off his horse, whatever. Mm-hmm. But the night before, I was watching some movie with him in it, and he was portraying a guy in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
I forgot the name of the movie. He got away with some murder in the movie from being in the wheelchair. And then the very next day, all of a sudden, news came on about Chris Rea. I'm going, what? And I was like, I remember. Of course, I was watching the movie because I'm going to support the actor in the wheelchair. And then it really happened to him. That was amazing. Dwayne, thank you, buddy, for coming in. Dwayne Wayne, inspirational beyond words. Thank you for coming in. Here you go. Jan, thank you again. Wow, way to go, Mom. Yes. And even our moms are
better myself. Exactly.
Moms are the great supporters. So, and where you said that you don't like to use the word or don't want to use the word sacrifice for the family, it's great commitment. Everybody pitching in, doing, helping. Love is put into it. Frustration.
Sure.
Hate. There's days that we hate each other.
It's part because of being a human being, right? It's just part of humanity. Yeah.
But I do use the word sacrifice because there are some things they gave up that they made sure that I was able to from this. So, but again, people don't think because mama went to school with Brooke, everything was all roses and everything like that and good smelly stuff from there. Because I hope I'm not putting words in your mind. Yeah, but there's days I couldn't wait for my family to get away from me and leave me alone. And I'm sure there was days they would rather push me outside and leave me out all night long where I was a big ass. And I'm sure of that. So,
well, I mean, isn't that just part of human relations, right? Like none of us acts perfectly all the time, right? We're fallible. We're all, subject to the full range of human emotions and human vulnerabilities. So sometimes they creep into how we interact with each other. Sometimes, we don't appreciate each other as much as we should. I don't appreciate all that my family's done for me. Sometimes, I feel like they don't appreciate what I've experienced. It just happens. But those instances are just like, they're minuscule compared to how we have dedicated our lives to each other. Like that's what I try to focus on more than anything else. And I'm certainly not saying that I'm successful all the time, because I absolutely am not. Especially when times are difficult, especially when you're going through difficult challenges like this pandemic has been. New York, as I'm sure many other states, was hit very, very hard, and we went on into lockdown very early on. Like I guess it was maybe March of 2020, and had some health challenges throughout the course of that year as well. So it was a difficult year, and we were kind of just looking at each other, the three of us, my parents and me. And sometimes it was difficult. It was difficult because you were experiencing not just the typical stresses and strains of life, but also those of the pandemic, those of not being around the people that we love outside of kind of our insular familial unit. And that was that was challenging, but we're stronger for it, for sure. Like I have nothing but complete awe for all that my family has done for me, particularly my mother, who, like I said, just completely dedicated her life to making sure that my life was as rich and as meaningful as it has been. And I can't imagine what my life would be like without that.
Amen, sister. I couldn't imagine what mine would be without, good close families and good close friends. You got some that's going to be in your life forever. Some's going to be in just for one chapter of your life, and then they're out of here. New people coming in. So, I'm just fortunate that God sends people my way, like Dwayne Wayne. Hey, Dwayne. Dwayne says, hey, that's just normal family stuff. Everyone thinks they're the only dysfunctional family. Okay. So there you go, Dwayne. That's right.
That's just family. That's just what it means to be a human being, right? It just means what it means to be part of a family, right? It would be, I think, an unfair standard for me to say anything else that, that my family has some kind of superpowers, right? We don't. We're dealing with a life circumstance that is, you know, certainly difficult is, you know, unlike many others, but is also very, very rich and very, very meaningful.
You think a lot of the, when we get frustrated so bad, part of it is, with me anyway, was frustrated that I couldn't do what I used to do, that I had to learn to accept more.
Sure.
and to accept the help that was brought to me and given to me.
Mm-hmm. So it's not easy. Grant's not
exactly
easy.
But then I think at some point for me, where I was so grateful to be alive, because I was told I wouldn't have made it if I wasn't an athlete. Mm-hmm. And so, but to be grateful. But then once I getting better, getting my new normal going, and everything, then it seemed like it just took a life for granted again, you know. Mm-hmm. And then frustration builds back up, and we went from there.
Right, right, yeah. Like there's some psychological theory or neuroscience, neurobiology theory that we kind of essentially you live on like a basically a happy medium for, you know, for lack of a better way of describing it. We go through, you know, these points of, you know, these downward points and these points of exhilaration. But for the most part, we kind of bottom out, or not bottom out, but kind of meet in the middle. You know, our lives, it's too difficult to live life on either extreme, you know, either in like constant exhilaration or constant depression. So you kind of find your way back to the medium, and your life becomes life with all of its frustrations, with all of its opportunities. It's a matter of making sure that you're more focused on the opportunities than you are on the sources of challenge.
There you go. And so, yeah, it's so hard to stay in a happy medium, isn't it? We get something that so fires us up, and then we got to come back down to reality. But then we have those days where we jump into Petyville, and we've talked with Jan about Petyville before, and her dad is one that says it's okay to visit Petyville, but it's not okay to move in.
Right,
and
so exactly. We get nice, right nice vacation, but you can't.
That's right. That. Yeah. I actually believe jumping down to Petyville is actually good for us. Again, not to move in, because mm-hmm. then you have troubles than more than you're wanting, mm-hmm. but to go down, because then we can sit back and meditate and look how far we have come in life and mm-hmm. what we have done and how we have helped other people from there. Then we can only move back into a happy medium again.
Right, right. I mean, to not is to essentially disregard the complexity of human emotion, right? Like we all experience the whole wide array of human emotions. And if we're just kind of not allowing ourselves to be introspective when we need to be, you know, to think about our lives when we need to, then we don't really have the time to actually internalize what those experiences mean. And we all have this depth of experience that make us who we are. So to just ignore that, I think, is to ignore really valuable parts of our identity.
Yep. And so let's tell everybody about your new book. Actually, I found an image I want to put up here. Let me get this. But you got a new book coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And loading this image as we're talking. And here she is. And the title of the book is going to be
Look Both Ways. Yeah.
Both Ways. And here she's got an image of Brooke going the other way on the street. You see the back end of her and her chair. And she's quoted here. The human body is at once frighteningly fragile and resolvently resilient. Our bodies break in ways that our spirit can remain unbroken. Man, see, that would take me 10 years to write something like that. So, I mean, that is a powerful, powerful little statement here. As much as our body has gone through and whatnot and going through, our spirits can be breakable.
That's exactly right. So, yeah. So, I have a new book coming out this summer, which I'm so, so excited about. It's called Look Both Ways. And it is extremely personal, right? I put everything that I could into it, you know, all of my thoughts and emotions and kind of lessons that I've learned over the past 30 years into this work. And I spent a lot of time crafting language in a way that I thought was particularly poignant or meaningful. That's just one quote. But I'm really, really excited about it. Actually, the cover is being, so that was an image that somebody had taken. And then we put some of the text from the book onto an image. But the actual cover design is going to be done within the next couple of days. So I'm very excited about that. I'm going to, you know, kind of blast that out as much as I possibly can, and then hoping to have it published and set to go over the summer, and actually going to do a live launch. So with some people here at my home for the actual event, but also broadcasting it either on YouTube Live or on my website or all of those things, Facebook Live, Instagram Live, to make sure that as many people can know about it and incorporate it into their lives in whatever ways that they can. I mean, I talk a lot about what disability has meant to me. I talk a lot about the nature of challenge and how it affects our lives and how we can learn to be bigger than the effects of the challenges are themselves. And it took a long time. Like I wrote it, actually finished it right before the pandemic, and wrote it, most of its content, that preceding summer, so the summer of 2019. And I just sat in my bedroom with the lights off underneath, you know, the ceiling fan, just kind of pouring my heart out in ways that I never really had before, on many days, kind of crying as I was writing, because it was, you know, I was talking about things I never really even thought about before, right? Like kind of almost opening wounds that I had never really even known were there. So I feel really excited about it. And I think it makes a very powerful statement, I hope. So I'm really excited to share it with everybody.
So while writing this one here, you were doing your own psychotherapy for yourself,
right.
Basically.
Exactly,
so,
right.
And then use that to help other people. So it's awesome, Brooke.
Thank you.
So it's cool. All right, hey, Dr. Ellison, Dr. Brooke Ellison. Hey, go ahead and tell people. And hey, I would love somehow to get involved with this book launch with yours. We can do another live YouTube with me and pop your book out there and help out. They just let me know, and we'll do something as well for that.
Oh, Dr. Perdue, I would absolutely love that. That would be quite a pleasure. Yeah, I want to kind of spread the word as broadly as I possibly can.
Do you Frank Sinatra, start spreading the news.
Exactly right.
And so here we go. Not that I sing like old Frankie, but old Blue Eyes, but start spreading the news. All right. Hey, Brooke, well, I want to thank you again for being here. Now, let me ask this one question here now that I at least get to use my hands.
Mm-hmm.
All right. They're not the greatest use, but I can at least move them and push my own wheelchair and stuff like that. What makes you stay so positive? I know you have your days.
Mm-hmm.
We all have our days. Well, I understand. I'm not getting into that.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you stay so positive so you're not in those days forever and forever?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, I would say that I keep my mind as active as I can. I keep my days as filled with purposeful things as I possibly can. So I'm a professor at Stony Brook University. So I teach there. I work with students.
Well, so you're talking about making the full circle. You know, mm-hmm. you go to Stony Brook
Crazy.
Medical when you first got hurt, and then you came back for your PhD, and now you're teaching
That's exactly
there.
Right. That's exactly
so you're talking
right.
talking about a full circle.
It is. It was a huge circle, but it was a circle for sure. Yeah, it's actually, I teach medical ethics and healthcare quality and things of that nature, like to future healthcare professionals. So, and I use a lot of my life as a vehicle to talk about things that many medical ethicists don't really have experience with, right? Like they research it and study it, but they've never actually, you know, like lived on a ventilator, right? So you're talking about, you know, life dependence or, you know, that kind of thing, or end of life decision making. Like, right? These are all experiences that my family actually had. So I teach there. I keep my days as busy as I possibly can. I serve on many different committees and boards and things like that, and that always, you know, gives me more reason to move forward. And, you know, I have a family and friends that keep me supported and happy and, you know, make my life rich. And like, that's what keeps me going. Like, I have two little nephews who live down the street, another nephew who lives in New Jersey. And they're just, you know, the lights of my life. Yeah, my sister lives down the street. My brother lives in New Jersey. I have friends all over. You know, all of these people keep my sense of hope and resilience, you know, very much buoyed. And, you know, I would never want to change that. So despite times that I feel down, like those are things that build me right back up.
Yeah, definitely with my family again, they'll let me get in the old Petyville for a short amount of time, and they're ready to get me back up and going because they know how miserable I would be with them. But I'm glad that I got friends like Dwayne Wayne and Sam and Jan, and another friend was going to be here today, but something come up. Last name is Nancy. She was hoping to be on today, but she wanted to let me know, Dr. Brooke, that she will catch you on the replay. So you can say hi to Nancy.
Sounds good. Hi, Nancy.
Hey, Nancy. You make it this far. You know, we mentioned you, Nancy. You didn't get this far. I'll know it. So, all right. So, well, I appreciate you being here, man. You just get me all fired up and everything. Just one reason to do this podcast is just, man, the people I get to meet that helps me build my character even a little bit more, and hopefully for the good. Hopefully. Yeah. So, and then push this message out to other people. Now, Dr. Ellison, you know that people are struggling, hurting today. And so if you can give us a message, powerful message, on how they can get through today, that would be awesome.
Sure. Well, I think none of us really fully appreciates how strong we are, right? We all, I think, live our lives chronically underestimating our sense of hope, and that can become self-fulfilling, right? We can build feelings of hope and resilience by just setting little goals for ourselves and not being too hard on ourselves and watching beautiful things happen and appreciate the people in our lives who give us the sense of purpose, who are the actual mechanisms of hope. I know that's been the case for me. And like I said, we're all much stronger than I think we ever let ourselves believe we are, irrespective of what happens to our bodies. Our spirit is much more resilient than our bodies could ever be. And, you know, none of us is perfect. None of us is a superhero. We all feel the full spectrum of human emotions, but we can't let those, subsume or consume how we feel about ourselves. And just because our lives change in ways that we don't expect, it doesn't mean that they're any less good or less meaningful. It's just finding new avenues of meaning and purpose. And we all can do it. We all can do it despite how difficult my life might seem. Because that would be kind of how I would characterize some of how I've lived my life. I hope that's helpful to everybody else.
Oh, it's if somebody's going to pick it up and they're going to run with it. We don't know who, and we don't have to know who.
Right.
But somebody 100 years from now, they claim this stuff's going to be all on the internet forever and ever now. So somebody's going to stumble across this, whatever it be called in 100 years, and they're going to catch that message and they're going to run with it, Dr. Brooke.
I sure hope so.
Hey, Jan. Jan said, thank you so much for sharing your story and insights, Brooke.
Thank you for joining.
I want to jump back one little bit here for a second. You had mentioned earlier, and I should have hopped in then, but you were talking about other people may say, if I would to done this instead of that, my life would be different. Mm-hmm. Well, like you're saying, you can't just look at that one thing because that one thing, but then if you don't keep on the right path, you jump off somewhere else in life. Now, what's going to happen?
Exactly right.
We don't know. We know what we know, and if stuff didn't work out from what we did, it's still not too late to get back on that road and still do the best that you can.
Exactly. There are many different inflection points in our life, right? It's not just the thing that we think identifies us that makes us who we are, right? There are many different points in our lives that make us who we are. And any one of them could go in any direction. Some we have no control over, some we do have control over, right? The events in our lives that make us who we are, the ones that we actually have control over and do something meaningful about.
Amen, sister. Dr. Brooke Ellison, again, here today. Hey, her book, newest book. I already forgot the name already. What's the book? The Other Side.
Look Both Ways.
No, Look Both Ways. Look Both Ways. Be coming out to you. And we're going to try to set Brooke up again. We're going to have a book launch blast one day here for all of you to come in and go from there. So if you hadn't seen the movie, hey, go pay your $4 or whatever it is on demand and stuff like that and go watch the movie and go from there. And so go ahead and get an old copy of the book and get ready for the newest one coming up. Hey, everybody else, thank you for coming in. If there's anything I can do to help out, go to my website, professorofperseverance.com, and you will see below there, once you get in, that my newest book has come out with a mini course, and it's Your Past Doesn't Have a Future, But You Do. Create your future today. Say, get a free mini course and go ahead and get a free ebook right there while you're there. So, all right, everyone else, do something today, tomorrow, something next week that's going to help you persevere past your paralysis.
Thanks for listening to the Professor of Perseverance podcast for motivation, inspiration, and encouragement. For more information, go to Facebook at Professor of Perseverance. Visit the website at professorofperseverance.com and view the YouTube channel, Dr. James Perdue, Professor of Perseverance.